It's time for Gnostic Media Research and Publishing's podcast episode number 195. I'm your host, Jan Irvin. Today, Michael Dean and Derek Slopey join the Gnostic Media podcast to discuss Namecoin and Meowbit, fighting internet censorship. This episode is being released on Wednesday, March 19, 2014, and was recorded yesterday. Michael Dean is a technical writer, first adopter, documentary filmmaker, musician, and libertarian radio talk host on the Freedom Fiends and Michael Dean After Dark shows. Many years ago, he was in a band on Warner Brothers called Bomb. He lives in Wyoming, and he says he loves cats. Michael was on the team that released Free Speech Me, the first ever user-friendly software for viewing .bit websites. Derek Slopey calls himself an entropy descrambler. Derek runs Alien Seed Software and developed the Silver Calculator app for Windows Phone and has been a developer for the Meowbits project. And their websites and projects, michaelwdean.com, meowbit.com, and freedomfiends.com, fiends.bit, peacemonger.bit, .bitkittypics.bit, and whatisthiscoinworth.com. And donations. This episode is brought to you by Tino Casey Berry and Bitcoin donations 1ADCMTC. Thanks to all of you for making this episode happen. And of course, we do our best to provide everything here for free, but your donations and website purchases are what keep us going. We ask that you please sign up for a membership or purchase something from the store on the website because we can't do it without you. We also accept Bitcoin, Litecoin, Feathercoin, and other donations. On the store page, you can pick up the Wheat Blows bumper stickers, bookmarks, our books, the Gnostic Media Archives, the She Who Remembers Archives, the Pharmacratic Inquisition DVD, t-shirts, or a membership to the podcast for the first 4 years or 5 years, whatever it is now. The views expressed by the authors and guests of this unprogram are their own and are not necessarily those held by myself, the host, or Gnostic Media. Check out the website at www.gnosticmedia.com, GNOSTICmedia.com. Reach me through the contact form on the website or at contact@gnosticmedia.com. Thank you for listening and thank you for your support. And here's my interview with Michael Dean and Derek Slopey. Namecoin and Meowbit, fighting internet censorship. Enjoy. All right, Michael Dean and Derek, how do you pronounce that? Derek Slopey?
Yep, that's correct.
All right, welcome to the Gnostic Media Podcast. I'm excited to have the both of you on, and especially for this fascinating topic of internet security. First off, starting with you, Michael, what do you do? What is your background? That sort of thing.
In this project, I'm kind of a professional catalyst. Basically, found a need, found someone that wanted to work on it, and worked on it with them. I'm kind of the cheerleader and worm wrangler, which means basically I don't write any code, but and this wouldn't exist without the guy writing the code, but also it probably wouldn't exist without me. It's a symbiotic relationship. My background is I write tech books for a living, and I've also make documentary films for a living. And before that, I was in a band that was on Warner Brothers. And before that, I was a bike messenger in San Francisco. I live in Wyoming now. I've moved here because I like guns and I don't like paying a lot of taxes.
And you're a radio host as well. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do a thing called the Freedom Fiends. We're on 22 stations. And I also just started a new show weeknight. That's a weekend show I do with Nima Vidati, who's also an activist. And I do a nighttime show called Michael Dean After Dark, Monday through Friday.
All right, and Derek, what about you? What's your background?
I'm a software programmer. I've been doing that for 20 years or something like that now, and that's my profession. I do IT, but I do software on the side. I do some websites on the side. I'm a family guy, so I appreciate activism, especially internet related activism, but I'm not able to do too much. So I kind of consider software to be my activism. You know, if I can do something to kind of promote a cause, then I get pretty excited about it. And this is definitely something that I'm very excited about, Meowbit.
All right. Well, speaking of Meowbit, what is Meowbit and how does it work? Who wants to take that? Who's the pro behind that?
I'll take the really basic end of it, and Derek can delve into it more. Meowbit is a system-wide program for Windows that allows you to view .bit domains on any program, any, you know, FTP. We don't let, it will work for email. We haven't tried it or really got it working for email yet, but any browser, FTP, whatever. Before, the only way to do that, there were a couple other ways to do that. There's a, somebody has a little plugin for Chrome, but that actually goes through a DNS server that's not secure. It's somebody else's server. What Meowbit does is goes through the Namecoin wallet on your end. So it's more secure than going to a .com site. There was another program called Free Speech Me that I worked on originally, and that program's still around. It hasn't been updated in a while, and it crashes browsers in my experience, and it also is only available for one browser. It is available for Linux, though, so if you're on Linux, that'd be the way to go. But it kind of does the same thing through a different method that seems to crash browsers. Our thing is system-wide. That thing only works on one browser that not a lot of people use, Firefox. And there's a couple other ways that are really technical and also not secure to do it. So basically, Meowbit is the kind of the killer app for Namecoin that delivers on its promise of 3 years ago of actually being able to create domains that can't be shut down as easily by governments with a phone call.
Okay, so basically what you're saying is that Meowbit is sort of a updated working version of Free Speech Me, of the Free Speech Me plugin. Now let me.
You could look at it that way, but it's not really an update because it doesn't use any of the same code. It's all new code.
Okay.
It goes a little further than that too, because it really provides .bit resolution for any application on your system. So it's not where Free Speech Me was just for websites or a web browser. The Meowbit will work for IRC. If you had a .bit IRC channel, I mean a .bit IRC server, you could connect to that server with a .bit. So it's not restricted to just websites.
So
it's a system-wide.
Let me just interrupt you for a second. Let me interrupt you for a second and just make sure that this point is clear to people. So let's say that people are going to gnosticmedia.com. What this would do is it would replace the .com with a .bit. Is that correct? .bit. Is that correct?
The user could replace the .com with .bit. It would be it's really a separate domain name. It's a separate top-level domain. It could be the same, though, just like you might have gnosticmedia.net and gnosticmedia.com. They're two separate entities. But yeah, if you had that set up as a .bit site, then it could show your site or any site, even if there was no... even if there was all your name servers were down, even if the whole internet... domain system went offline.
Yeah, and to be clear, you can easily set up a .bit mirror to an existing .com site as a webmaster. It's pretty easy to do. Take 7 cents worth of Namecoin in the Namecoin wallet. We have tutorials at meowbit.com on how to do that. And then you would give out, you know, you would pimp the thing for your listeners, and you'd say, hey, go get this thing Meowbit and bookmark our site, gnosticmedia.bit. And if the .com is ever seized, you'll still be able to get to it. It involves that little bit amount of work ahead of time, because basically if they decided to start massively taking down .com and .net and .whatever sites, it would really help if everybody already had this. That's why we're kind of evangelical about it. It's kind of like with guns. You know, I know people who say, well, I'm not against guns, you know, and they'd be good to have, but I've got other priorities and I don't have a lot of time and money. And I'll, you know, if the poop hits the fan, I'll go get a gun and learn to use it. When the poop hits the fan, you're not, it's going to be too late. And the same thing with .bit websites. When they really start taking them down, you're not going to be able to get to meowbit.com. That's going to be one of the first ones they take. So you want to do it now. You want to get people involved in it. We want to get people involved in it. You can also make a purely .bit site. I have a couple of those. I have .bit kittypics.bit, which is pictures of my cats, because you know, cats drive the internet. They drive the .com. I figured they should drive the .bit. And it, once you set it up, it basically behaves exactly the same. You can set up a WordPress on a .bit only site, or you can mirror it to a .com. There's no magic to it, really. There's no like needing a special company to host it. Most web hosts can host them easily. You just replace the name. It's pretty. It works just like .com in a lot of ways, but on the user end and the webmaster end, but it doesn't work the same on the resolution of the DNS way because there's no central person doing it, no central authority.
Derek, what are some of the primary security issues with the way that the internet operates today?
The biggest one I'd say is just that it's centralized, and centralized in a lot of different ways. I mean, it's accidentally centralized because there's large backbone providers.
I'm not laughing at that. That's a great question. I'm laughing because it's like the answer is kind of the short form is how is it not a problem? But okay.
Yeah. All right. Ahead. Feel free to approach it from both directions if you like. Derek, you take the first and Michael, you take the second.
Yeah, well, I can't speak to a lot of specifics about routing and things like that, but there's a lot of other people working on things like mesh networks that allow the internet to be up even if you lose your backbone. I live in Maine, so we've got a couple fibers in and out of the state. If those get cut, most of the traffic in Maine gets routed down through Boston and back to us. So I wouldn't be able to get, for example, my work computers if we were on two separate internet service providers. There's not a lot of meshing, and there's a lot of people out there working on ways to mesh that people can independently mesh networks together and have make private networks and interwork with the current system.
And what meshing is instead of having things as a chain. Okay, think about like Christmas lights. You know, they used to be in series, and if one bulb burned out, you had to replace the whole string. Now they're in parallel, where sure. If one bulb, you know, that's kind of a way of linear meshing to where if one goes out, it can route around it. And what he's saying is in a lot of rural areas, it's one pipe in, one pipe out. So if that goes out, there's not redundancy. Whereas in a big city like California, you know, San Francisco, LA, Austin, whatever, if one goes out, there's 50 others coming in.
But the other big issue is I can add on that with the domain system. I mean, the domain system is very centralized, and it's kind of akin to having to call the operator to get a phone number every time you need to get somebody's number. You only have their name, you don't have their number, you know. And eventually, we all got telephone books that we could keep in our house so that we could find out what somebody's number is independently without asking somebody else. And that's kind of what Meowbit does: is it has all those records on the machine.
So on your own machine, not somewhere else. Yeah.
Yep. So you don't have to go out and ask anybody else. And it's provably correct.
And with the way it's done with all other domains, all the .com, .net, .edu, all the European ones, every country, it's all done through a central authority. And a lot of them are done through ICANN, ICANN, which is the American-based one, which is actually being sold right now to European, as of yet unnamed, interests. You know, they're saying it's to make it worldwide and democratic, but it's more like it's going to be under the control of a lot of countries that have a lot more censorship than America. And if they don't like, you know, if Russia doesn't like what you're saying about what they're doing in the Ukraine, they can probably take down your American website after that happens.
Wow. All right. So, Michael, as you said a minute ago, what isn't wrong with the internet security the way it is today?
Well, again, I like Derek, I'm not an expert on routing. We're basically doing something on the machine, and there's a lot of people who understand a lot of different things about the minutiae of how things work, but I can speak in a really general way. I think that the centralization of domain names is one of the biggest problems, because in 1994, when the web came out, and then by 95, 96, more people started using it. Not nearly as many as now, but it started getting mainstream media. It's kind of where Bitcoin is now. Like, you know, 2 years ago, Bitcoin was something weird that geeks used. It was like magical libertarian fairy dust money that was being exchanged like pogs or baseball cards among friends. And now it's like really coming into its own as an economy, but it isn't mainstream yet. That's kind of where the web was in 96. And I remember reading a lot of articles written by people on the web for people who were not on the web. And one of the things that kept coming up was they said, it's the promise of free speech and democracy. Everybody has a voice. You know, some kid in his basement in Germany has the same viewability as the New York Times. And that was absolutely true. But still, the New York Times website had a lot more hits until Web 2.0, which is around the year 2000, social networking, where you could actually have a website without coding HTML, and you could actually talk back to the internet and talk to other people on the internet. And then things could go viral. And from then on, the kid in his basement in Cincinnati or Berlin still did have the same possible reach as the New York Times, because sometimes things would go viral, to the point where things like the New York Times kind of don't have a reason to exist anymore, and most of what they do is point at cool stuff on the internet. You know, like, check this out. And then I really believe that Bitcoin is Web 3.0, because it's doing something vastly different with the internet, of allowing trustless, secure, pseudo-anonymous currency to be exchanged. And I think that each generation of web point whatever is you know, doubling kind of under Moore's law, to where I really think that Namecoin could be Web 4.0, because it really delivers on that original promise of the internet, of everybody has a voice, because everybody didn't really have a voice before this, when their .com, .net, etc. was registered by one organization that could be taken down by any law enforcement agency pretty much without a warrant, just calling them up and saying, this is a violation, take it down. And then you go to the website and you see that bald eagle logo, and it says the Department of Three Letter whatever has removed this for your security because of allegations of blah, blah, blah. That is not true free speech. It's not free speech when anybody can take it down. So if you have a .bit domain, not anybody can take it down. And yeah, they could go to your web host and say, take this down, and the web host might do it. But you could literally upload to another web host, or even host from your home, if it wasn't something they wanted to kill you for and you weren't trying to be anonymous, if they were just taking it down to be snitty. And this is something I want to work with Derek on a blog post on how to host from your home in an emergency. But regardless of where you're hosting it from, you can send another notice through your Namecoin wallet for 7 cents worth of Namecoin to the network. And everybody worldwide within 40 minutes will be able to see it at the new location. Like, most people won't even know it was down.
Yeah, the updates are actually free. I thought it cost two updates.
I don't think they're
too.
Always free. I think that's just because we've been making a lot of transactions.
Well, you may get the transaction fee, which is 0.0005.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Point,
but you won't have to pay the 0.02 that you have to pay when you register it.
So it's tenths of a cent to update it.
Okay, so who wants to take this? What is ICANN? What is ICANN?
Go, Derek.
All right, Derek.
Okay. Yeah, it's kind of the root grantor for the top-level domains. They're the ones that say, they're the ones that are ultimately in charge, and I guess they maintain that they have ownership of any domain that's registered. So that's why they can take it down without, you know,
well,
due isn't process.
That, when you register your car, that's what you're essentially doing also, is you're giving ownership to the state, and then you carry this little certificate with you and a license. So essentially, I suppose, if you are registering the site, they do own it then.
Yeah, yeah. The registrars work through ICANN. They're contracted with ICANN. I don't know the details on that entirely, but I believe that they can just be asked to take it down. I think that's part of their agreement.
Yeah, it's the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. My nickname for them is ICANN Take Your Website, because I work for the government. And I'm really kind of blown away on how few Liberty people have jumped on this .bit thing, because everybody I know has these websites and podcasts and radio shows where all they do all day long is complain about, look what the tyrants did to this citizen today. And, you know, like, everyone I know is against registering their guns, but they're ranting about it on websites that could be taken far easier than your guns. To take your guns, they have to find you. They have to corner you. They have to try to not get shot. They have to, you know, take your guns. To take your pro-gun website, if they're anti-gun, if they don't like it, all they have to do is find, like, oh, you used a picture of Bart Simpson here 2 years ago that's copyrighted. We're going to take you for copyright violations. They don't even have to show up at your house, man. Yeah, like, you won't even know who did it. They just send a fax or an email to ICANN, and ICANN will take it down. So, and getting your website mirrored as a .bit is about as hard as sending a Bitcoin. So with our tutorials, so I don't know why more people aren't doing it and are being slow to adopt it. It's kind of frustrating to me.
Okay,
well,
so
there haven't been a lot of good tools out there until just recently. So, you know, I knew about Namecoin, but I overlooked it myself for months just because it just didn't seem like it was being developed. But there's been a lot of acceleration and development of software for Namecoin to make it easier for people over the last few months.
Yeah,
me and others too. I mean, there's a there's some good development happening. You know, the Just Do It people are out there, you know, doing it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what are some of the names or what are some of the websites that ICANN has shut down? Have they shut down websites in the past?
A lot of them. Yeah. They most often, I believe most often they shut down things that are offshore through America that are run maybe by people in America. No one knows. You know, they shut down obviously the kiddie porn stuff, which they probably should. They shut down a lot of, you know, like knockoff Rolex watch stuff. They go after first the stuff that looks criminal to most people. And then they kind of trickle down too. Like I can't think of any examples offhand. There's so much tyranny out there that just kind of pisses by my Twitter feed. Do you know
Pirate Bay has been dodging.
Oh yeah, Pirate Bay. Dodging
shutdowns for a long time and other torrent sites. I mean, there's been talk about, you know, illegal, what do they call it? The fair something or other, the unfair something or other.
Yeah.
Where they talk about, you know, shutting down, you know, news portals that they consider not well researched or whatnot, and of course that applies to, you know, 80% of internet.
So you're
bloggers.
Talking about shutting down the New York Times, LA Times, Washington Post, et cetera, no. Right? Because most of the time when I read that stuff, it's poorly researched, based on speculation, fallacies, and lies.
No, well, that won't get shut down because obviously, and I know you're being that stuff is the. You know, that's the mouthpiece for the state, pretty much.
Right.
But they did. Now, YouTube took down Russia Today for a while last year and then put them back up after a lot of outrage. And that's not, I mean, that's YouTube's right to do. That's their property. But they kind of have a monopoly place in that.
Absolutely. All right. Do certain web host providers just go along and comply with government orders? I mean, beyond ICANN, let's say if the government contacted GoDaddy.com. Would GoDaddy just comply?
GoDaddy's notorious for that, for complying. Yeah.
They're a participant in the system. They only have the privilege to register domains because it's been granted to them. So if they refused ICANN, I'm sure they would lose their contract to register domains.
Yeah.
What websites or web hosters do you recommend people use? Are there any that don't just flat out comply?
Michael probably has more recommendations. I run all my own sites for the most part.
I haven't run up against any censorship of anything I've done so far, but that could change. I think it will change for a lot of people. So my recommendations would be based largely on ease of use and uptime. I use HostGator. I really like them a lot. I do not register domain names there. I register .com names at what's the other one? DreamHost, who I do not recommend as a web host. I had a lot of problems with them of downtime, but they're cheap and good in my experience for registering .com, but that's not what we're talking about today. So yeah, HostGator has really good uptime. I pay like $160 a year. I have unbelievable amounts of throughput. You know, I'm running two popular podcasts on it. And they're also their web interface is very compliant and easy to use with .bit domains. And I, like, nobody there knew what it was. I called their tech support people, and I had to call four of them in a row. And finally, one of them was like, isn't that registering domains using Bitcoin, which was closer than anybody else had got. But I just figured out how to do it on my own, and we did tutorials on it on the site.
Nice.
Meowbit.com.
But I don't think the future is necessarily going to a third party to host your website either. I think that there's going to be solutions soon for people to be able to do this locally and in a distributed way.
So yeah. Are we going to just start putting people's websites into the blockchain? Is that what you're saying, Derek?
No, like Michael mentioned earlier that you know, you can really host your website. If it's a low traffic website, which, you know, most bloggers' sites are pretty low traffic, you can host those from home. I mean, you can get a 10 megabit pipe to your house for cheap now and host your own website. You know, there's other systems coming out, names of which escape me, in which people are looking at finding ways to distribute those so that it can be kind of multi-homed. You would have your website, you could have your website at your house and your friend's house. And if your house is off, then their house would come off. I mean, I think that's the future. I don't think that...
Wow. It's sort of like cloud home web hosting, where if they shut down one location, it automatically turns on the other. That's fascinating. All right. So, you know, under the current system, if people wanted to reach your website after ICANN shut it down, what would they do? If, you know, if it was only ICANN that shut down the web domain, what would you have to do?
My sites are all mirrored as .bits, and we have a list of working .bit sites on meowbit.com. That's one of the pages on it, and most of mine are listed on there.
Yeah, if you had Meowbit and get it running and type in the website .bit.
Otherwise, they would be going to, you know, 7200.92.61.40 or whatever, and they would have right. to remember the each IP address for every single website that they frequented on the internet, and that's if the web host like GoDaddy didn't shut them down.
Yeah, and even knowing the IP address doesn't necessarily work, because people will have multiple websites on the same IP address, so the name would have to be passed in as well in order for the server to know which website to serve out. Some bigger sites, of course, you can go to by IP address, but I'm sure Michael's IP address has a few different sites on it.
A few dozen, yeah.
Sure. All right. So, you know, and the hosts do this so that they can lower the costs instead of putting each website on a dedicated server. So what is DNS or Dynamic Name Service, and how does it work? What is the risk of using it?
You want to take that, Derek? And also, I do want to point out that what .bit is doing is not technically DNS. It's DNS-like.
Meowbit works as a DNS bridge to the .bit formats, you know, the .bit blockchain essentially. But yeah, DNS, it's like a telephone book. You know the name you want to go to, but you need the number. So you look it up and you ask whoever you have your whoever's you're using for DNS, your DNS server to do that lookup for you. So usually that's your ISP. A lot of people use Google has a very popular public DNS service.
They got hijacked this week for several hours too.
Yep. Yeah.
You're
asking somebody else to resolve it for you, and that can be faked. That can be faked right at the DNS server. You know, if you have Comcast, you'll ask, you know, nameserver.comcast.com, you know, who is gnosticmedia.com. And they'll give you back a number, and you have no way to independently verify whether that's correct or not.
And so let me just interject here. This has actually happened recently where the NSA was caught pretending to be the Facebook website, and then getting everybody's login, passwords and everything. Is that correct?
Yeah, I saw that, and I'm kind of like, isn't that kind of redundant, the NSA faking being Facebook? But
Well, that's a really good point. You know, maybe that was a red herring to keep, you know, people from realizing what they were
They're doing it all day long.
All day long on all of the websites or something, you know. So, all right, what is Namecoin and what is its purpose?
Want to take this, Derek?
We talked a lot about the .bit aspect of Namecoin, but Namecoin's pretty neat. Namecoin is a fork of Bitcoin. It works just like Bitcoin, except it has the added feature of being able to, I guess they call them color coins, although I haven't seen that said in the Namecoin documentation, but essentially you have a way to create transactions that have data attached to them. And essentially it's just a dictionary of names and values.
Color coins is something else.
Okay. So you create a name and a value on the blockchain, and it costs you a little bit of Namecoin to initially create that name and value. You can update the value later. For .bit, you create a name d/ whatever you want your .bit site to be, and then you assign a value to it, and the value has the information on what the IP address is, or what the name servers are, or you can have a Tor site that the .bit is supposed to redirect to. You can put security information in that value
now
field.
Now, for those who don't know, a Tor is a website that runs on the Tor browser that is an encrypted network, correct?
A Tor site or an Ongen site is an anonymously hosted site where you can't actually, there's no actual direct way to find out where the website is running from.
Interesting. All right. So with Namecoin, are you able to put other information in there or just your website and things like that? Could you put personal information or something in there that you didn't want to lose except for maybe the wallet key, and you could stick it into the blockchain?
Absolutely. To me, this is really interesting stuff. You can register any information you want on the blockchain.
What would be like the longest thing that you could put in there? Could you attach a file, or how would that all work?
They currently have a limit of 1023 characters on the values, and I think there's some limit on the names, which is much less than that.
256, I think.
Is it? Yeah, which is pretty good for a name. I mean, there'll never be, you know, that many names.
Yeah, those are both like Windows 3.1 file length restrictions, basically.
Yeah. So there is a limit there.
But what type of other information would you want to put in there other than making sure your domain doesn't get shut down by the government?
Well, in addition to the domain spec that they have a, and by spec, I mean that people have developed common formats for putting this stuff in and published them so that other developers can kind of work with the same format. But they have a name ID spec, which is a name that's prefixed with ID slash, where the .bit domains are prefixed with D slash. ID is prefixed with ID slash. So I have ID slash Derek. And if you do a lookup on that, it has my email address and it has my name. So
also be used to sign things and prove that you wrote something?
Yeah, you can put your PGP key on there, your public PGP key, and then you could sign something with your private PGP key and prove that it was you. There's all kinds of possibilities. I specified a namespace for registering product information, which MeowBit's using, so that the application itself can look on the name chain and see if it has the latest version of the software or not without going back to the website.
Derek's being really modest. Derek did something with the blockchain that's never been done. The updates, the alerts for new software update, you know, when there's a new version available, is being done over the blockchain.
Wow.
We've been saying for a week now that as far as we know, this has never been done elsewhere. And we've had it on a lot of forums and nobody's come forth and said, I've done this. So we're pretty sure this has never been done before. And people talk all day long about, you could do this with the blockchain, you could do that with the blockchain. And people have these grand plans that look like blueprints for flying cars and, you know, the systems to power them, but they don't really explain how they're going to work. And they have teams of people and they have funding. And that's great. And I'm sure one of those will do something really amazing, but I think most of them won't. But Derek actually did something that's never been done with the blockchain, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Thanks, Michael. Yeah. Appreciate that. Yeah, it also stores the MD5 hash of the software itself, so you can verify that you have a legitimate copy of it, where normally people will publish those on their website, but if the website gets hijacked, then there's no way to verify that, you know, the software you're downloaded or even had sitting around is any good.
So you just downloaded the NSA's copy when they mirrored your website for a few minutes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if we can be confident that the NSA can't steal our bitcoins, then we can be confident that when we update a name, that only we can update names on the Namecoin blockchain. So it's a pretty amazing thing to me. There's another group of people that are putting together a name One Name?
One Name. .io.
Yeah, they're using another namespace that's a U/ namespace. So I registered U/Derek, and that one's not really set up yet. But their concept is to be able to send people bitcoins using just the name. So you could send bitcoins to Derek, and in that namespace, I will have published what my bitcoin address is.
It's like a phone book for Bitcoin.
Yeah. All right. So Michael, recently you came up with an idea regarding Namecoin and the former Free Speech Me. What was that?
I've come up with a bunch of ideas, and at this point, none of them really include Free Speech Me. Which one are you speaking of?
Well, I mean, you know, that became, didn't you come up with the original idea for MeowBits, or what was behind that?
No. The idea of a Namecoin-like system was come up with by a guy named Appomatto a little over 3 years ago. He's a programmer. He didn't work on it. He didn't name Namecoin. He just posted on the Bitcoin forum of, hey, here's an idea. and some other people picked it up. Aaron Schwartz, the guy who basically invented RSS feeds and killed himself, allegedly, a while back because he was facing 70 years in federal prison for looking in some basically public, you know, internet files of MIT, I think it was. He came up with a similar idea and wrote a paper on it around the same time. And then there's a little team of guys, like three or four guys, who basically came up with Namecoin. And they still do some work on it, but they're really, really busy guys and hard to get a hold of. There was a guy named Khal, K-H-A-L, who's in France. I know that. I don't know much about him. I've emailed a couple times with him. He came up with it. And a guy named Felix, P-H-E-L-I-X, and a guy named It's Not Lupus. These are all the names that they use on the internet. I don't know the real names. And a guy named Vinced, V-I-N-C-E-D. Cal and Vinced basically came up with Namecoin, and then a few other people have developed on it since then.
And Derek, you're one of the current developers of Namecoin?
No, I don't develop for Namecoin directly. Oh, okay. or at all, really. Meowbit interfaces with the Namecoin client. So the Namecoin client does all the lookups and verification and sharing of data with other nodes. The Meowbit talks to that in order to resolve the name. So it's essentially a bridge between name resolution, which happens on your own machine, and the Namecoin client, which is running on your own machine.
Now, some people have got to be wondering, okay, now this Namecoin idea, just as Bitcoin was created by this anonymous figure, this Namecoin idea was created by these guys that have, you know, these different online avatars. Why should we trust them? And Derek, maybe you can address this, but I want people to understand that people such as yourself, programmers, et cetera, can go into the open source code of these coins and actually look at exactly what they do. Would you mind explaining that?
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, if you had a name, say Google registered their .bit, that has a lot of potential to be pretty valuable. So you want to be able to audit that, the software that's controlling all that stuff, and make sure that, you know, it isn't just set up to rip you off. So all of the software is open source, and people can go and look at it. And people are very good about finding, you know, historically have been very good about finding problems in public software, especially software that's managing things that have a lot of value. Namecoin's open source, Meowbit's open source. You can download the source code and compile it yourself, or you can, you know, trust that the or you can trust that the source code was compiled by somebody that wasn't nefarious.
Hey, can we take a little break and save the files, and I actually have to sound check something with somebody for my show tonight. I gave him a window of time that I thought was going to be before we started, and we started early. I'm going to hang up and let you guys call each other, and then I'll jump back in 20 minutes or 10 minutes or something.
Is that all right? I'm fine with that.
Okay. That works for me. Yeah.
Derek, give him your...
He's already on my thing, so I can just call him back right now.
Okay. I'll just hang up, and okay. You guys can do that.
All right, hanging up right
now.
Does
it actually disconnect us when he drops out?
Yes, it will. All right.
I guess it does just drop us when he hangs up.
So, all right, well, Derek, it's just going to be you and I here for about 20 minutes. Michael had to take a step out for another show recording here for a little bit. So you and I are going to continue, and he's going to rejoin us hopefully shortly here. But, okay, so we've covered... what was the free speech plugin, I guess, outdated? What is the bit domain? Now let's cover, is Namecoin a threat to Bitcoin?
I would certainly say not at all. You know, Bitcoin brings something to the table, you know, that's the ability to, I mean, Bitcoin was a very unique idea, but it's being used as a currency. Namecoin wasn't designed to be used as a currency, even though it's an almost direct fork of Bitcoin with a couple extra features. Namecoin was designed to be used as a store of information. And even in terms of mining power, Namecoin doesn't detract from Bitcoin because you can do merged mining. This was part of the original design of Namecoin. was that when you're mining for Bitcoin, you might also happen to find Namecoin blocks. And it barely penalizes you at all to check to see if you've solved a Namecoin block when you're working on solving Bitcoin blocks, which is a really brilliant design. It means that it's not going to reduce the mining power of Bitcoin at all, because people are going to go over to Namecoin and start mining that because it might be a better value for them one day. So almost nobody mines Namecoin directly.
Now, just so I just want to interject real quick, just so people know, you can, Namecoin itself also has a value, though. I've seen it, it's presently at $3 or $5. I think I've seen it go as high as $5 or $20 per coin.
It does, yeah. And
so it is its own store of value aside from being able to store names. So now, if somebody has a coin with information, that's just in the blockchain. You couldn't actually send somebody a coin that accidentally had somebody else's information in it, right?
No. I mean, not using the name coin. You can send the names. If I registered Gnostic Media, a domain, I could send it to you. I could send it to your Namecoin address, and you would have it and have control over it. So they can be set, but the Namecoin client only allows you to do that in a separate place. You can't just spend coins and accidentally send names too.
Now, what if the government came in and shut down your website? Could you send a notice out through Namecoin to let everybody know?
Your domain in Namecoin, everybody would know, just like you would update your DNS records if you changed web providers or moved your website to a different server. So currently, of course, if you want to change the IP address of your website because you moved it, you have to essentially ask permission. You go to the hosting company or the DNS registry and say, I'd like to change this name to point to this IP address instead. With Namecoin, you just do it. You just post the record to the blockchain.
Okay, so just to be more clear for the listeners, how can this system protect activists from government censorship while still reaching the people?
Well, I mean, adoption by the people that you would want to reach is the key, I think, letting people know that it's available.
So for it to really work, everybody needs to adopt it so that it's a system outside of the government, outside of ICANN, so that if anything happens, we're already ready to take advantage of this next system. It doesn't even affect us, so to speak, right?
Yeah. And I think, I mean, given enough time, unless, people start really cracking down on things. I mean, I don't think that, it's imminent that the government is just going to start yanking the plugs on people that, yanking the domain names from people that they don't like. I don't think that's going to happen, right away. It might. I wouldn't rule it out either, I guess. But given enough time, even in the current environment, I think that the adoption of something like Namecoin for registration of public records is inevitable. Because we have these systems like ICANN because they were necessary at the time. And going forward, the domain name registry, I should say, the county registrar of public deeds is really just maintaining public records. And historically, you've had to have a central authority to do that. But with these new innovations in being able to share and prove that a blockchain is correct, that a public ledger is correct, I see a lot of those things going away inevitably.
So what you're saying is basically the notary public is going away and everybody can verify a document right there in the blockchain. Would we have a notary public who would sign what was going into the blockchain?
Yeah, I didn't mean it. You could have people sign what's going in the blockchain. I didn't mean necessarily a notary.
I'm just adding on one extra layer here.
Yeah. I mean, you could have people that you trusted to sign things for you. How they'd establish that trust, I don't know, but if a group of people did trust somebody to sign things, then they could have their ID and their key that signed your record and said, yeah, this is legit, and you could put it on the blockchain. It, what it eliminates is the state function of keeping records, public records, because even the way they do it now can be forged. I mean, you could go into the Registry of Deeds and just start tearing up books, and there could potentially be no way to recover that. There'd be no way to prove that that those books hadn't been torn up.
Okay. Let me just interrupt here, because so what we're looking at with Bitcoin and some of these other new things that are coming out. So we're getting rid of the banks, we're getting rid of the lawyers, we're getting rid of escrow, and so this is also a way to get rid of central government record keeping as well. Is that right?
Yeah. And interestingly, this an interesting concept, and I don't know who came up with this concept or where I first heard of it, but the way that we do copyrights right now. Or patents, you know, one of the big arguments for patents is, you know, people wouldn't patent something if they wanted it to stay a trade secret, because if you patented it, you would have to release publicly what you're patenting.
Sure. Well, I mean, it's argued that Einstein, for instance, stole E equals MC squared from the patent office, et cetera.
Yeah. Now, imagine that you could write a book and not release it, but still publish publicly that you had created it. And you could do that using the blockchain by writing the book and hashing the book, taking a hash of the book, which means computing a code from the total contents of the book, which would not be creatable outside of having had that text. And you publish that on the blockchain. Just say, I created a book, and this is the hash. 5 years later, if somebody else said,
let me just back you up a second before you move forward, and then please do continue right there. What is a hash?
A hash is a computation. You've heard of CRC or MD5. MD5 is a hash.
Sure. And then SHA is a hash, right? SHA-256, SHA-12, SHA-3. So what I'm just trying to get is in the listener's mind, because, you know, in cryptocurrencies, there's almost always, except for maybe Netcoin, talk of hashes.
Yeah. And I'm not a cryptographical expert by any means. I'm kind of a layman in terms of it, and anxious to learn, but I've just never really delved into the deep parts of it.
So going and returning to this issue of hashing and putting a book into the blockchain or whatever, how would that work?
Yeah. So you create a document, some sort of document, and you take a hash signature or an SHA hash signature of it, and you publish that in the blockchain. If later on somebody comes along and says, hey, look, I wrote a book and it's your book, you can say, no, I have this book right here. And look, I published the hash of this book 5 years ago. So you can prove that you have done something without having even released it.
So where do you go and send your $90 or $130 to the U.S. Copyright Office?
Yeah, you wouldn't have to. You'd have to pay 0.02 at the present time. You'd have to pay 0.02 Namecoin to register a new name in the blockchain.
And then you have to wait for a year to a year and a half to get the letter back from the office, or how does that work?
No. I think it would be recorded within an hour or so.
And of course, maybe. I'm being sarcastic, because that is the way that the U.S. government copyright office works. And, you know, Michael, you know, he stepped out for a moment, but I'm an author as well. And I've had, one of the books I wrote took me a year and a half. From 2007 until 2009 to actually get the copyright back from the copyright office.
You could even incrementally copyright it as you go. You finish chapter one, take a hash of it and stick it up there, you know. And you don't have to release the book or the document to just say I did this, you know. And this could apply to all sorts of different things. You could take a picture of something that you invented and take a hash of the picture.
Now, what about companies like Walt Disney, who exist by stealing other people's ideas? Almost every movie, cartoon, et cetera, that Walt Disney has put out, they actually took from an open source, older book or something, and then they recreated it, and then they copyrighted it as if it were their own.
Yeah, I'm not sure that, you know, we've all built on each other's. We've all stood on other people's shoulders to create what we did.
But is there a way that you could just like put right into the code, for instance, this copyright expires in 2050 period, and no government licensed corporation is going to go in there and completely rewrite all copyright law just for its own benefit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not necessarily, endorsing copyright law or patent law either in this.
I'm not either. What I'm saying is that, this is what Walt Disney did, was they basically took all of these ideas from other people, and then when the copyrights expired, they went in and demanded that copyright law itself was be changed just to fit them.
I see. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, the burden is still on the creator to say, "Hey, I did this." If the creator never steps up and said, "Hey, I did this," in terms of what the legal ramifications of it are, I don't know. But what the blockchain allows you to do, you could build law around this, I guess. But what the blockchain allows you to do is prove that you did something, that you can say, "I did this at this time, and here's the proof." And I'm not even going to show you what I did when I recorded the proof. I'm just going to record the proof that I did it. And later, I can say, "Hey, here's the picture of this thing I made, and here's the hash of this picture." So you've never seen the picture before, but the hash has been recorded for years. And only this picture could generate that hash. So that's the theory anyway. I'm just a guy sitting in my basement, other people are going to come up with all kinds of great ideas about how to use a public ledger where you can store any information you want on it, even if it's a limited amount of information.
All right. So is Namecoin a Ponzi scheme or a government conspiracy to shut down the internet?
I don't know if it matters.
And why doesn't it matter?
It seems to be useful.
As far as a Ponzi scheme, I'm kind of being sarcastic. Probably that's a better question for Michael to answer. But, there's no central figurehead, taking a Satoshi or a Natoshi or whatever you call it for Namecoin from every transaction. And obviously this whole idea is to be able, is a workaround to prevent the government from shutting down the internet. Correct.
Yeah. A lot of people have called Bitcoin Ponzi schemes, and I know there's been articles about that recently too, which I haven't read because it doesn't really matter what other people say to me most of the times. But early adopters are always going to make out better. So, the people who created Namecoin probably have a bunch of Namecoin, and I just say good for them. I mean, it's in the end, it's still a good system. Nobody's benefiting from continued use unless it's other than people see more value in it. And when people see more value in it, in your idea, you're usually rewarded for that anyway. So
yeah. So as the creator, they sort of have the right to have a little more of the early coins, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I bought my first Bitcoin when it was. I bought it out of a vending machine at Porkfest for $6 a couple years ago, and I thought that was kind of expensive because I didn't know what they were. And when I got home, I started looking into Bitcoin a little bit, and I said, "Geez, I'm not really interested in putting any money in this, but I can mine it a little bit." And so I started mining Bitcoin, and I ended up with a few Bitcoin just from doing that. I wasn't an early adopter that bought them at 6 cents, but I still adopted early, but they could have gone to zero,
Sure.
So you never know. I mean, the value is always whatever people interpret it to be, and it could be.
And it's tomorrow. And that is even manipulated, as we saw with Mt. Gox. And then we see these constant disinformation stories in the mainstream media, and every time they do this, we see Bitcoin's value drop, which to me indicates there's probably a buying frenzy going on somewhere from those who are directing the bad news stories.
It's more economics, but I don't know if Bitcoin's value dropped or the last trade's price dropped. I think there's a lot of people out there that have Bitcoin that would not sell them for the current price. I mean, I was, when Bitcoin got down to $400, I bought one. So I said, "Wow, this is cheap," but most people I think that hold Bitcoin probably wouldn't sell it for less than $1,000, and maybe even more for what they believe. So It's a different economy now.
Absolutely.
With these things.
And you know what's funny is when a listener first sent me a few Bitcoin the first time, they were worth less than a dollar a piece.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
So you got in pretty early.
Right. Well, and so, you know, to think in December they were over $1,200 a piece, it's, you know, from a dollar. All right. So Namecoin and Meowcoin.
Meowbit.
Or Meowbit, excuse me. What is the direction that you see this headed in the next few years?
I think, I hope Meowbit becomes obsolete. I would hope that
that Meowbit becomes obsolete.
Yeah, the sooner Meowbit becomes obsolete, the better, because that means that other people will have rolled better solutions, or it'll be more integrated into existing solutions.
So this isn't about your agenda and your creation of Meowbits.
I don't know. Meowbit's a good way for people to start using .bit now, but I would hope to see operating systems support .bit domains directly. And people are already working on that for Linux. There's been some talk about building it into some of the Linux distributions so that it works right out of the box. Meowbit's goal was to increase user adoption and to make it easy for people to start using this. And, you know, it's just for Windows, which is, you know, probably the more difficult of systems to get this working under. But it's also the operating system most people use. So, you know, Meowbit's just a crutch to get .bit working. And in the long run, I believe that there'll be much better solutions, much more integrated solutions. This is the best, most integrated solution for Windows so far, but it's certainly not the best solution. I've got Michael calling in.
All right, are we there?
Yeah. Hey, did I just go on and on and on and you missed it all?
Yeah.
Well, you know, now we're all back. So, okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael is back. And
I just want to preface that I would never leave an interview in the middle of it. And Jan had a last-minute thing come up and pushed the interview forward 2 or 3 hours. And I had somebody who had said, yeah, call me during this time. I'll be doing nothing. So I'm not upset that Jan did that. I'm just pointing out I am still the consummate professional and would never schedule something in the middle of an interview.
Gotcha. All right. Well, and I do appreciate you guys rescheduling last minute for that. And it was a mistake on my part. Just I had completely overlooked double booking there.
Did Derek survive? How did Derek do on his first solo interview?
Derek did survive, and we got through a few of the questions. Namecoin, been around for 4 years. One of the things I was just asking Derek, and maybe you want to go into this a little bit, you know, I was asking him if Namecoin is a Ponzi scheme or a government conspiracy to shut down the internet. Would you like to cover that, Michael?
Yeah, the answer is no.
So, give some reasons why, other than just know why it's not. And I agree with you with that. I'm just, playing the devil's.
Well, it's not a plan to shut down the internet, because people are slow to adopt it, and they could already shut down the internet and the existing internet. And it is all open source, free software, GNU licensed, source code's available. Anybody can look into it. Anybody can re-output it and use their own from that. So yeah, it's not, I mean, that's the thing with open source, which is kind of a misnomer. Open source, free software is the more accurate term, but it's not a Ponzi scheme at all. I mean, it's not really, it's barely a currency, and Bitcoin is not a Ponzi scheme either. It doesn't meet the criteria.
Right. And but Namecoin is, for instance, traded on BTC-E. So what about things like that? I mean, its current value is $3 or $5. I've seen it go up much higher than that. So it does work as a store of value as well.
Well, you'd think that the new interest in .bit and Namecoin that's come out of first Free Speech Me and now out of Meowbit and out of things like OneName, you'd think that that would drive the price of Namecoin up, but it's actually driven it down. And I think the reason is because the sudden interest that we and others have brought to it has made people who do dual mining, you know, with Bitcoin and other currencies, to start like tweaking the percentage of Namecoin that they're producing. They're like, oh, this thing may work after all. So there's been a lot of it dumped onto the market recently, which is a good thing because it's more than a currency. It's basically the cement that you build the new internet superhighway with. It is actually a resource for web design and web use.
Yeah, and it has to have a value. It has to have a value. I mean, there is work that goes into creating it, just like there's work that goes into creating carrots. I mean, well, carrots, of course, are perishable. Namecoin isn't. But, I mean, anything that a person works to create is going to have some value. But that doesn't
mean
I don't agree.
I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, I think that's the value idea of worth, which is really distorted in a lot of ways, and a lot of government BS drives that too. And a lot of people that go to college these days, and I'm not saying you're like this, but I want to play devil's advocate on that. You know, people say, well, if I worked a year on this ugly painting, it's worth a year's worth of wages when I sell it, which is, you know, it's based more on demand.
But this is an exchange price. This is what people are actually actively trading it for.
Yeah.
But so that's not like I say this is worth $500 and that's the price. I mean,
right.
The market itself has determined the price.
I mean, yeah, I think that
if people were willing to pay more, there would be more of them driving the price down, right? And if there was people willing to pay, you know, if people didn't have any value in them, then people wouldn't be bothering to mine them.
There's an extrapolation on that too that has to do with security, which my understanding of it is that if Bitcoin were easier to mine, if it didn't involve all the work it involves to mine, and the same thing with other currencies, they wouldn't be as secure because the work that goes into mining them basically makes it it costs less to play it honestly than to try to cheat it.
Yeah.
And if it took less work to produce them, that would not be the case. Yeah. So it
adds to
the
security. The more miners you have out there, the better, because the more secure the overall system is.
Sure. Yeah. Now, how would, you know, and Derek was just trying to explain some of this, but how would you go about mining Namecoin? Do you actually mine Bitcoin to get Namecoin, or I don't understand.
Derek's the guy, the authority on that, because I haven't done either.
Yeah, I'm on it. I still mine. I was talked a little bit about how when I started mining Bitcoin, but I still mine Bitcoin, and I'm in a pool that mines Bitcoin. And as a side effect of mining Bitcoin, at very little additional cost or very small amount less Bitcoin you get a little bit of Namecoin on the side.
Did you mention that you also mine on a 35 for fun? You mine on a $35 Raspberry Pi sitting under your monitor at your day job?
Yeah. I didn't mention that, but yeah, the hardware that's plugged into the Pi is a lot more expensive than itself was.
Usually you run BFG miner or something like that to power on the Pi to power something else.
Yeah, I've got a couple of the USB sticks. What are they? Block eruptors
and Ant miner. Gotcha.
Right. All right.
I've got a Butterfly Labs jalapeno miner.
Okay, so. Let me ask the two of you, how successful have broad internet shutdown attempts been in the past, such as Yugoslavia or Egypt, et cetera?
Well, Turkey, let's see, that's been happening in a few different countries lately. I think, what's the thing where the Crimea is? I can never remember the name of the country.
Is that the Ukraine?
Yeah, the Ukraine. Russia feeds the pipes and a lot of the DNS into the Ukraine, and Russia has been censoring and shutting down activist websites that are anti-Russian, you know, basically saying, we don't want your troops on our property killing us, and then they blog about it and their websites get shut down. That's been happening a lot through DNS. What else? Turkey pretty much shut down the whole internet recently, except for government websites, because they were trying to quell protests.
Now, how successful have the people been in getting around this stuff, though?
Not very. And, I mean, they can use Tor, which people misunderstand Tor, and Derek can talk more to that, of the anonymity. It's mainly for the anonymity of the website, not the user. And people think that if they're using Tor, the user is anonymous. That's not always the case, right, Derek?
Well, it's more difficult to make the user anonymous because you've got to be really careful about what browser you use, and that's why they have the Tor browser package that includes Tor and includes Firefox browser that's configured to not store cookies, not have JavaScript, and even then, if you type in your name, it's going to go to the website. So it doesn't, and the exit and the entrance and exit nodes, both, I think at least, yeah, well, there's probably a lot to that, but certainly ways that you cannot be anonymous on Tor.
There's precautions that people need to take to try to approach anonymity on the internet that most people don't take. Like, they'll get a VPN and think that makes them anonymous, and they're still like logging into Facebook on that VPN using their email address and their name and, using Gmail and things like that. Like, basically, if you're going to be anonymous, you need to have two complete computer identities, preferably on two complete computers. You know, you have one for your stuff that uses your name and another one that's probably going to be Linux that is using a VPN that has no connection to who you are. And even so, it's pretty easy for a motivated government or, you know, criminal or just curious person to look at data flow and the kind of things you post on and the sites you visit and figure out a profile for who you are. You really have to work at true anonymity.
Now, in countries like Egypt and the Ukraine, have the people still been able to get information out through text messaging and things like this? You know, my point is that if global governments wanted to, would there be a way that they could just shut down the whole world's internet and, you know, to stop Bitcoin or Namecoin? And what would be the effect of that?
Yeah, they'd have to turn off all the power.
They would have to turn off, because everybody with, you know, modems, you know, as far as I know, the IRC chat still exists. The chat boards from 20 years ago still exist. The old backbone is still there. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, even FidoNet still has nodes.
And Usenet and all of that is still there, right?
Yeah.
But that goes back to the mesh networking issue where, you know, there's a lot of people working on that, and there's hacker groups setting those up in some urban areas where there's a wireless mesh network that allows people to...
They still have to connect to an ISP, though, at some point.
So if the government shuts something down, you could fire up a generator and have a wireless network running for everybody within, say, a quarter-mile radius or something like that.
Yeah. So at least people could still communicate. And yeah, if somebody had some connection to the internet that was on the wireless mesh, they could share that with the rest of the mesh users. There's a product called, I think it's Byzantine. It's nicknamed the Zombie Apocalypse Network that people are working on. That's an out of the box Linux machine that is made to connect to wireless mesh networks.
Interesting.
The thing with all this that you're talking about is more people need to be experimenting with it now, because it's like the gun analogy. You're not going to be able to get one when it's down. You have to already have it, know how to use it, have neighbors and friends using it, and have at least a rudimentary network of people using it.
You know, I remember years ago, the U.S. government through one of the top routers or through ICANN or something, shut down Yugoslavia's internet. And it took them maybe a couple of hours to have their entire internet rerouted through another country.
Well, there's something that the CIA actually produces called Internet in a Box. Do you know what that is?
I do not.
It's a large suitcase that can provide internet via satellite and open Wi-Fi networks to a couple neighborhoods at a time. And the CIA uses it basically when they close down the internet in a country, and then they want to provide a propaganda internet for the people that are helping them install the puppet dictator without knowing it. Yeah, they'll send an operative just sit in a hotel room, point a satellite dish out the window, and set up internet for people. And it works kind of slow. You know, satellite is not as quick. It has to go up and down, and the bandwidth isn't as high, but it allows people to, like, tweet and things like that.
Great. All right.
I mean,
go ahead.
There's a lot of ways that we could lose connectivity. Solutions being worked on, too. So, you know, Namecoin is just addresses one issue.
And the issue here is even if the government shut down all of the electricity, I mean, the government shut down all of the electricity around the world, you would still have people with generators and whatnot who would still be able to
power some areas. They wouldn't do that either. I mean,
be the impact of their own security and everything if they shut down everything? Because isn't that didn't the military originally create the internet so that they could have a mesh network? And now the people are using cryptography to take essentially to take it over. Is that correct?
Yeah. And here's one little thing I just thought of that I want to put in that I think is really important that I'm actually going to turn into my new meme for this whole thing is that all of this stuff and Namecoin and Meowbit is a small but important part of it. All of this kind of possible preparation for having redundancy in the internet is the least addressed prepper concern, and it should be one of the widest addressed prepper concerns. You know, people, everybody we know has a bunch of bullets, a bunch of guns, a bunch of meals ready to eat, and a bunch of water and a bug out bag. But you're just tweeting about everyone's on the public government controlled internet complaining about the government all day long. And they could turn a lot of that off with a switch.
Yeah, the government could take over a small Wyoming town, and I would be reliant on finding out about that through either the government-controlled media or the internet.
Right.
Or ham radio.
Yeah, you know, I don't have a ham radio.
There's a lot of ham radios. A lot of ham radio operators in this part of the country, sure, out in West, and they would get information out. But they're actually really targeted to encourage to collaborate with the DHS. The DHS now actually has meet and greets where they invite ham radio operators and kind of deputize them. And ham radio operators have a long history of helping in emergencies. You know, they are the way to get information out. And they'll relay phone calls for people and hold it up to the mic, hold it up to the speaker, you know, so people know their loved ones are alive or where they are, you know, after an earthquake or a flood. But which is not sinister at all. It's great. And in a libertarian paradise, in LibPair, that would exist. But the DHS is really adamant about turning them into, you know, little government control monkeys.
Yeah, I think that humanity has really gotten used to being able to send information. The free flow of information is something that we're accustomed to at this point. And if that was ever shut down, there would be enough market pressure to get that turned back on, even if wealthy people had to send satellites up.
I suppose if they turn it off, you know, that would cause an immediate outrage in the public that wouldn't even normally rise up, and you would certainly know right away who was the guilty party if they were trying to censor everything.
Yeah, but with most people, what would they do? The people that normally tweet about it would all go to the coffee shop and sit in the dark and complain about it.
Maybe all for right. A couple days.
So
somebody would bring a solution.
What is the benefit to the average computer user for having an encrypted internet?
Derek can take this.
I'm not sure who the average computer I travel in pretty small circles. I don't know what average means.
Let's say
means.
If everything you did on the internet was encrypted in SHA-256 or in SHA-512 or something like that. And then the government to be able to hack into your stuff, you know, every single person, they would have to sit there using massive amounts of processing power to hack into each single person's internet usage.
Yeah, the more difficult it is for somebody, it's not just the government, it's whoever might be spying on you. You know, it might be some competitor or whatnot. The more effort it takes to do that, the better. I mean, clearly they took down Silk Road, but it took them a long time and a lot of money to do
that. And they didn't do it by cracking cryptography. They did it by doing what they usually do, which is either spying on the end of one end or the other where it's unencrypted, or in their case, what they did or what they claim they did was some really basic, you know, basically getting out in shoe leather on the internet. They looked at usernames, they looked at patterns, what time the guy was online, what kind of things he was interested in, and can put two and two together and found a username that was similar on a public website where they could find out the guy's IP address and home address, and took a chance and raided him and then just sweated him in a room without a lawyer and got him to say, you know, got him to imply that maybe he was the guy. Because he was also kind of braggadocious, I think.
Yeah, no amount of cryptography can beat that. But, you know, putting boots on the ground is pretty expensive. So,
but they were really, really hot for that guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, think about like in law enforcement. I mean, think about like one of the biggest, you know, evil doers of our time publicly, the Unabomber. the whole FBI spent 20 years having every man basically trying to find him. They finally found him because his brother said, oh, this writing looks like stuff my brother used to write, and called the FBI. The FBI didn't do anything, man.
Wow. Well, and you got to remember that Kaczynski was, in fact, warning everybody about all of this new spy technology, and that was why he was trying to blow up the SRI Institute, et cetera.
Well, he was also very anti-internet, and it's kind of ironic because his words have been spread more on the internet than anywhere else.
Yeah, which is irony, but... you know, the issue in a lot of the issue that he was trying to expose was this blanket spy technology. And instead of thinking of solutions like cryptography and Bitcoin and things like this, his solution was to bomb. So what about China? Are people still able to get around the Chinese government censorship?
Absolutely.
And what
about I have a friend I went to college with, who is married to a Chinese woman in China. He's on Facebook every day. He listens to my podcast all the time.
Can people using Meow Bits just get right around it as well, or is that something different?
Explain why Derek should take this. Why it would and wouldn't help in different situations with countrywide censorship.
I mean, you could do that if that. China would still have the ability to block the specific IP addresses that they didn't want you to go to. So Meowbit probably isn't the best solution for targeted censorship like that.
It's more for protecting against censorship at the DNS host level, which is the common way they do it. It's also .bit domains are more resistant to hijacking than .com are, hijacking by non-government actors. And really, Derek pointed this out really succinctly. It was that when the government seizes your website, what they're literally doing is they're hijacking it. They're making it so gnosticmedia.com doesn't go to your site. It goes to a site at some, you know, FBI or wherever, and exactly. You get the FBI logo.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, if they're hacking it or spoofing your site, they're going to make it look identical to yours and then get everybody's information.
That's even more dangerous.
Right. And they have been known to do spoofs, which I think is what they did to, or which is what the claim is to Facebook. But as you pointed out, it's kind of redundant because isn't Facebook Intel. So, go ahead, Derek.
I was just saying, you know, in the world where Namecoin is the only place that registered in the fictional world where Namecoin is the only place to register domains. Although I believe that it's going to be Namecoin or some derivative of it, you know, in the future, there's still going to be people that don't necessarily want to take responsibility for maintaining their own .bit domain or own.
Oh, that's really common. I mean, I had a guy who's really intelligent, really libertarian, kind of a libertarian rock star, who actually was really supportive of this whole thing and has talked to a lot of people about it. But he kept asking me, like, you know, where do I register one of these? How much does it cost? And I explained to him, no, you do it yourself. It's 7 cents worth of Namecoin. And I sent him some Namecoin and told him how to do it. And he's like, I don't want to do that. I want to pay someone else to do it. And there will always be people like that. But the thing is, that's like saying, I don't want to have gold or guns. I want to have them, but I want someone else to store them in the town depository for me or something, you know?
But it's important to recognize that there will be people like that, and the market will provide a solution for those people that need those services.
The government compulsory education and everything is, and, you know, the whole socialist system that they push down on everybody has really created a, you know, I need mommy and daddy's approval and help for everything sort of mentality in the society. So what I do want to get into, though, for a minute, and I know we started to talk about this earlier, I think, Derek, when you were off the phone, Mike, or maybe this is a repeat, but how does your work and Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies help to facilitate people's understanding in cryptography and in order to better protect themselves on the internet?
I'd like to see things so people don't have to understand them. I mean, you think about, like, most people are like, oh, Linux, that's weird and scary. But everyone uses Linux every time they access a website because most of the servers on the internet are Linux.
Sure.
You know, people use encryption every time they go to Amazon and they don't realize it. They don't have to understand it. I would really like to see things universal. I mean, Derek and I have talked about how we would like to see Meowbit put out of business by, you know, all the major browsers and computer companies putting it in by default.
Sure, but here's the thing, though. Let me interrupt you there, Michael, because people still need to get the concept of you should have your dog's name and your child's birth date for your password. You should have a 30 or 35 or even longer random password and these sorts of things.
Actually, random passwords are not the best passwords. The best passwords are really long sentences that would never exist in nature, are not in the Bible, are not in Moby Dick. You know, like, my cat is really neat and she is my best friend, purple monkey dishwasher. That's a great, great password. That's a lot better than 10 or 12 letters of random characters and exclamation points.
Because, I've heard you say that before, yeah. Michael. I think that might really be your password.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Derek.
He's going to be running around, ladies and gentlemen, changing his password.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, oh, Derek, you're so, that was funny. That was the best thing I've heard all day. Okay.
All right. So, now, how is your work helping people to keep informed? Who wants to take that, both of you?
Well, I'm just the propaganda arm of Meowbit, so my job is keeping people informed. Derek can take the rest of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think it's just about getting the information out there, and that's something that Michael's been very good at doing with Meowbit, and it's what's driving the whole project, really. You know, it's about adoption. You know, I made the software as simple to use as I could, and Michael's been, you know, getting the word out, and that's how I think these things develop over time, is just people realize what's possible first, and then they start thinking about it. So as a developer, Michael introduced me to some of the concepts of Namecoin that I hadn't really considered, and it got me excited about it. So I started learning about it on my own. You know, it's not about making a document that people read, or everybody learns different, but it's not always about making a document that people read that teaches you how to do things in a very specific way. But it's about, you know, opening people up to new the ideas. It's about getting people excited about things.
Yeah, I've written really solid tutorials. I've written the documents that people need to read, but that's not what's going to spread this. What's going to spread this is one person finding it, getting really excited about it, and telling two friends.
Or having you guys on a radio show and telling a few thousand friends.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so let me see here.
I think it's an inevitable technology. I think that it's really, at this point, all about timeline. And because the ability to store stuff in a public ledger that everybody can prove is correct is just invaluable to humanity.
And I will add that we do take donations, and they are useful, because we're doing this. Like, Derek has a full-time job, a wife, and two kids. I have full-time work, more than full-time work, and I do two radio shows, you know, one at night, one in the daytime. So, like, I'm confused most of the time, wandering around going, wait, is it day or night? And, you know, and I'm married and I have a life also. And on top of that, we're working like 20 hours a day, you know, like 20 hours a day on this. If someone sends a little bit of Bitcoin, Namecoin, Litecoin, PayPal, it makes us feel really good and it makes us want to keep going. Whereas we'll do this anyway. But sometimes it gets a little like, ugh. Like today I have a really bad backache, but I still have to be on the computer working all day, doing things with this. And, you know, somebody sent us half a Litecoin today, which is like 10 bucks, and we split it 50-50. That's like $5 we made today on this. Didn't make anything yesterday, probably won't make anything tomorrow, but that $5 we each got made me feel a lot better. Probably Derek too.
The future is our reward, too.
Yeah, man.
Leaving a place for our children, for that matter. Yeah. All right. So, Michael, would you please give a short, brief, step-by-step breakdown of how someone might use Namecoin and Meowbits? If you can do it in a audio word way without visualization.
Yeah. I'd start by going to Meowbit. And let me look at the site. Let me get up. I just sat down to help my back, but I will get up and suffer for my art. All right. So Meowbit, I would go to meowbit.com and I would go to the install page and I would download the Namecoin wallet. It says to do that. It has links for it. Download the Namecoin wallet, let it run for 5 hours and update the blockchain the first time. Then I'd install Meowbit. We have a separate install for XP. We have one for XP and one for Windows 7 and 8. So pick your operating system, install the right one. If you have any problems with it, go to our forum. There's a link at the top. Post a thing. If you post on our forum, most people don't have problems. I mean, one guy just posted like, wow, it was seamless. It was great. And if you do have a success story, go post that on the forum too. This guy said, very impressed with how easy it was. So,
yeah, you know, and I did try to register Gnostic Media and Trivium Education the other day. They are in there, but unfortunately I'm on GoDaddy and it is on a shared server, so I'm going to have to figure out how to do that. And
still be able to do it. I mean, GoDaddy might be so creepy that they've already blocked .bit registrations. I doubt it. I don't think they've heard about it. I think it'd have to get a lot more popular for them to do that. But I'm on HostGator, which is shared, and I was able to do it effortlessly. Okay. So basically, get MeowBit, get it working. Go to our list of .bit websites. That's another page on the site. The pages are all linked at the top. Check it out. Surf around a little bit on some .bit sites and go, wow, this is kind of neat. The government could not take this down. There's a real value to doing it and seeing it in front of you. You're like, okay, I get it. Then I would say go to our page, .bit mirror your site, and set up a .bit mirror for your site. And then I would say probably start a .bit only site, and also make sure that you let us know about those that you set up, because we'll add them to our list of working .bit websites. Then I would say tell two friends and send us a little donation. And I'm not like pimping donations like, we need money, but it's kind of like, it really helps, man. It really
helps.
Absolutely.
And this show is, donation listener sponsored as well. So we do understand all the way across the board. So, of course, that goes for this show as well. Now, Michael, why the name MeowBits?
Because I like cats, and I was trying to think of a name, and I thought CatBit, and CatBit.com was registered. My wife was sitting at her computer next to me, and I said, CatBit is registered.com. And I wanted a .com site. I didn't want a .org. We also have a .bit, meowbit.bit, obviously, but someone can't get to the .bit till they have MeowBit, so we had to have a .com. And I didn't want to do .org or .net or anything. It's like, you know, we aren't pretending that there's no plan to ever take money on this. And it, really, .org was originally for licensed nonprofits. They took away that requirement at some point, but it really has no meaning. And .net is literally supposed to be for, you know, internet service providers, but they don't require that. So .com is one that made sense. And I looked at my wife and said, catbit.com is taken. And she looked kind of like thoughtfully and said, how about MeowBit? I said, checked it. It was available. I got it. I also like saying it.
I wasn't too excited about the name when I first heard it. I was already working on the software, but it's really grown on me a lot. And when Michael gets talking about MeowBit, he's just so passionate about it, you know, and it's worked out well. I've heard so much good feedback about the name. Even my wife loves it. So
I like hearing people say it too. MeowBit, MeowBit, MeowBit.
Well, MeowBit will be up on the Gnostic Media website.
Cool.
So what are the largest threats to Namecoin and MeowBit?
People being too busy to do it. This threat to the whole .bit thing. The largest threat to MeowBit is probably a government rocket-powered grenade coming through my window.
Yeah, I don't foresee any threats, but I'm an endless optimist anyway. You know, I mean, the same threats that apply to Bitcoin, if there are any, would be threats to Namecoin.
That government supercomputer in Utah actually working?
I mean, I think people have proven that there's no.
I love these.
No way to.
I love the magic black box quantum computers that they admit they don't know how to work, and it's like, okay, wait, Mason's black box, and Mecca black square. The magic black box. I get the joke. Let's see.
If people start breaking encryption, it's going to be a big problem beyond the.
Yeah, it's going to be a problem for the government.
Yeah, because we would be right into the government systems, wouldn't we?
Well, it would also just destroy the economy because, Amazon wouldn't work, PayPal wouldn't work, et cetera. You know what else wouldn't work? Credit cards, if people could break encryption.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, encryption can always be made more difficult. It's a differential issue. You know, how long does it take to encrypt versus brute force something? So
right, all right.
But you know, something better than Namecoin might come along, but it's going to be.
I hear a cat. Is that Michael making cat sounds, or is that an actual cat?
That's my cat saying hi, Charlie.
Cat's got his face in the microphone. All right, Derek, you first. What is the single most important takeaway point that you want people to remember from this interview?
Just that things are changing so rapidly, and people are becoming more and more empowered to take over functions that used to be necessary for government to do. And we talked a little bit about that when Michael was offline. I'm just blown away by the potential, and I think learning about it and paying attention to the way technology is trending and seeing the decentralization of things is just really empowering for people.
Isn't it? Michael, same question.
If people would spend 1% of the time and money that they do on internet prepping as they do on bullets and food and water prepping, they'd be a lot safer than if they spent any more time and money training with and or buying bullets and food.
All right. And gentlemen, would you like to give out your websites?
I don't really have a website that's working too well right now. I've been working on Meowbit too much.
All right. Well, we know
Meowbit.com.
Meowbit.com. We know Michael has Michael W.
I have
Dean.
A few here.
Okay.
Yeah. MichaelWDean.com is my new radio show at night on Genesis Communications Network, Michael Dean After Dark. FreedomFiends.com, and there's also .bit for FreedomFiends.bit or MichaelWDean.bit are both ways to get to that. FreedomFiends.com is my other radio show on Genesis Communications Network. Fiends.bit is actually kind of becoming the thing that people type as a test because it's always up and it's really short and easy to remember, FEENS.bit. That's actually a repository of magnet links to torrents of the first 300 Fiends episodes. So basically, if all my websites went down, that one's still accessible and it's still gotten most of the, you can still access most of the important media I have if all my websites were taken down and I were drone. So fiends.bit. Creamy Radio Audio is my audio advice, how to do caviar sound on a cat food budget site. Oh, there's so many, man. Libertarianpunk.com. I don't know. I have like 10 others, but those are the main ones.
What's the .bit site with the libertarian quotes?
Ah, yeah, that's our friend, our torrent master, Sean Diwali has a site, peacemonger.bit, and it's just one page, and if you hit refresh, you get a different page every time, and it's different pictures and different libertarian quotes.
It's a useful .bit site.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen.
Peacemonger.
Thank you very much, gentlemen, for both of your time. I really appreciate it, and it's been very enlightening and bringing some important issues to many people's ears.
It's been great to be on. Thank you.
And
I want to thank Hesperus. I want to thank Hesperus for introducing us, and my cat Charlie for purring.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's a loud purr there. All right, gentlemen, have a good one, and that is a wrap.
All right, thanks, brother.
Thank you.